On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Adam Pinn to discover oil, gas, and short-term rentals.
Hey, Mavericks. This is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them, with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover oil, gas, and short-term rentals. Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show, never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, well, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today we've got the privilege to learn from somebody who's been in the real estate and oil and gas industry for some time. Prior to his career in real estate, he was a software engineer. Ultimately, it all changed when he decided to focus his long-term efforts on investing. Now, I would describe today's Maverick as someone who's passionate about connecting with investors and matching their needs up with investment opportunities that make sense for them. Today's Maverick, I've got Adam Pinn here with me. Adam, welcome to the show. Say, for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Well, thank you very much for having me. So I'm Adam Pinn, Bidwell Capital Fund. We do oil and gas syndication, do some short-term rental stuff. And I started as a software engineer and turned into a real estate investor, transitioned that to pretty much be my full-time income. And so we look to try to help other people get that same type of freedom that I've been able to experience by doing real estate investing.
Yeah, you've had a multitude of experiences, and it sounds like there's a lot we can unpack today. I'm curious about the oil and gas. You've never had anybody on to talk about that. Tell me about your first step into oil and gas. How'd you get turned on to it, and what was that like?
Yeah, so it's a fascinating space. I like to say it's an easy space for bad people to hide out in because there's high risk. And anything with high risk, someone could say, oh, you know, it was just a bad well. You lost all your money, but they could, you know, they could have stolen it. You never know.
Wow.
And so kind of going down that path, we found someone that we trusted, right, from referrals. And we started working with a partner that I was interested in from the tax benefit side of things. So I obviously cost segregation, real estate depreciation, trying to offset W-2 income at being a software engineer. This was another avenue to be able to do that same thing. So having been through that process on the real estate side, I said, wow, there's this interesting side on oil and gas where you don't have to have real estate professional status. So if you come in and you invest in an oil and gas deal and you come in as a general partner, which we can go into some of that in a minute here. If you come in as a general partner, the tax code says that, and I'm not a CPA, but the tax code says that you can take that deduction off your active income. You can offset capital gains, ordinary income, 1099, with your investment in oil and gas through intangible drilling costs. And that has to do with the drilling of the well. So payroll and any other costs associated intangible with the making of that hole in the ground.
Talk to me about the GP piece. That sounds a little curious. We're very familiar on the real estate side from a GP, a general partner, a limited partner standpoint. What does it mean to come in as a general partner?
Yeah. So with oil and gas, you have to have liability to it. So most of the time when you're investing in oil and gas, you don't have to have liability, but if you want to take that as an active deduction, you have to come in as a general partner, you have to expose yourself to that liability. And then that's one of the ways that you're able to translate that realistically passive loss of passively investing in oil into an active loss on your tax return. So with that standpoint, you're coming in as a general partner. Doesn't mean you're a managing partner, like maybe me and other deal sponsors would be on these, but you're coming in as a general partner. And then the idea is that once you receive your tax benefit, you're now going to be transitioned into a limited partner. So after about a year in our funds, you come in, general partner, get your tax benefit. We exploit the tax benefits of the well and the drilling. And then after a year, we transition everyone to a limited partner, which allows them to reduce that liability. The income stays active, which is an important thing to remember, that now if these wells go well, then you end up with a active income that you're now going to have to go offset all over again.
They come in and you said something, they're exposed to liability, right? You got the exposure. What does that mean? What does that liability look like from a general partner standpoint?
Yeah. So we always look to partner with operators that have carry insurance and they name our fund as insured, but there's something that happens with the drilling of the well or anything from a liability standpoint, just as if you were a general partner on a company and there was an issue that came back and sued the company, you're liable too. So you're basically opening yourself up in that standpoint, which is why we look for operators with a track record that carry insurance, make sure their subs carry insurance. It's no different than kind of most industries where there's equipment and drilling and construction where you're going to have those similar liabilities. And I'm not an attorney. So, you know, really is when you're getting involved in any of these, best to consult your own asset protection attorney, really, because where do you place this in your structure, especially when you're planning for the tax side of things too?
Sounds to me, we've talked a lot about on the show about risk and reward, right? So one end of the extreme, you go out and buy a bond and that relates to real estate. You could buy a Starbucks, a McDonald's, something that is relatively low risk and relatively low return. On the other side of the equation is ground up development, bare ground speculation, and maybe this type of structure that falls into the risk and reward. So talk to me about the reward past the tax benefits, which are tremendous. What do rewards look like? What could they look like? I guess it feels a little like gambling because you really don't know. You're drilling for oil. That's the reality of it. You don't know if it's going to hit or not hit.
Yeah. And so there's a whole spectrum of risk when it comes to this field, just like you just described in real estate, from development side to buying a Starbucks, it's similar here. And let's leave the tax benefit out of any of these, but I'd say the riskiest side of oil investing is going to be wildcatting. Coming in, finding a new field, drilling a hole in the ground where there's never been oil exploited before. Maybe in surrounding areas there has, but this field's never been proven, right? There's no proof there's oil here. The rewards are high, right? Because you're basically buying raw land and hoping there's oil.
Right.
Then on the flip side of that, the total other end of the spectrum would be the already producing wells. So going in and buying existing production. So coming in and buying a well that's kicking off 10, 20 barrels a day, you're hoping that it cash flows maybe 15, 20% a year. The asset is whatever production it's doing. So it's not like a house where you have equity, which is an important thing to remember in any one of these investments. Because where we like to sit is somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, where we look to come into what's called a proven undeveloped field. So we come in and we drill, or our operators that we partner with drill in a area where there's already been oil that has been found. There's wells in the area that have been found. And so you come in based off of those known reserves and drill wells around them and at similar target levels. And we've done that for the last 2 years that I've been working in this space with operators that have experience drilling. They're called PUDs, proven undeveloped. So coming through and having that kind of lower risk, because we know there's oil there, we just have to get the hole in the ground. There's time frames that you have to hit, and then actually getting those wells into production and that oil taken to market, right? You have to ship it off to a refinery. And so with that, our goal with most investors is to try to do something like money back in 3 years is my goal as a personal investor, right? We want to look at tax benefit. Maybe that's 30% year one, because you know, get 90% deduction at a 40% tax bracket, you're saving like 36%.
Right.
Then if you can get about 30% return for the next 2 years, in about 3 years, you get your money back. That's what I'm hoping for as an investor in one of these deals.
Incredible. Let's pivot. Let's talk about short-term rentals. That market has been, it's ever-changing, but it has been an incredible way for people to take advantage of the demand that's there. And it's not just vacation rentals. I think a lot of people think short-term rentals, you got to be in Florida or Hawaii or someplace, but it's not only those places. There's a multitude, much like what you just said. There's a risk and reward across the whole spectrum. And the same thing is true with short-term rentals and then mid-term rentals, which maybe we can touch on a little. Tell me, where do you guys participate? What does your world look like in short-term rentals?
Yeah, I think you brought up some really good points there. Most people, when they say short-term rentals, they're thinking a 10-bedroom beach house and people are coming there just for the summer. But short-term rental industry has really turned into anything from a bungalow in the forest that someone rents or a treehouse, all the way to those luxury vacation rentals. And we kind of fall once again in the middle. I like to be in this happy medium in a lot of my investments. And so we buy mainly fourplexes, some duplexes that are one bedroom, some two bedrooms, a lot of studios. We love studios because the most people want them, right? We target traveling professionals that are going to be there for a night or two, sometimes nurses that are going to go more towards that midterm rental of a month or so. That's great. You do have to worry about tenant landlord laws at that point because they've now been there for over 30 days. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we look at properties that are sitting in that midtown area of a market. We operate in Memphis, in the midtown there. I have some properties in the town in Chico in Northern California. And we just want to be close to downtown. We want to be somewhere that a traveler wants to go. One thing I do when I go look at a new market is I come in and I look at Airbnb and I just type in the name of the city. And wherever the map defaultly puts me, that's kind of my beginning buy box. I don't want to be outside of that because that means anyone going to that city that searches, I'm automatically not in it.
Yep. That's interesting. So oftentimes it sounds like you're buying a duplex, a fourplex. Are you converting all of them to the short-term space then?
Yeah, so we do. So we come in, a lot of times they're in pretty bad shape. We got an inspection report back this morning where the pest control guy said, I've never seen so many roaches. I said, well, we'll make sure to get rid of those after we buy it. So clear them all out, completely redo the bathrooms, kitchens normally, new flooring, paint everything, and then put them on the listing platforms. We use a various amount of online travel agencies, OTAs, Airbnb, VRBO, Booking.com. We have our own website. And from that, that's how we start to drive bookings. And we'll get anywhere from one night stays to 1 month stays.
So I'm curious, you've got an option of either going long-term rental as an apartment unit or going to short-term rental. Percentage-wise, how much greater on a gross basis is the short-term rental producing for you in income?
So I'll just go with an example. We get, for a lot of the units we're looking at, I'd say market rents right around 1,000, maybe up to 1,200. And we're getting right around 2,500 to 3,000 a month on the gross basis.
Yeah, 2 to 2.5x.
Yeah. So where that helps me, because when you break it down, the cash on cash return could actually be similar because there's a lot more expenses. You've got cleaning. Maybe you have some more vacancy in certain months. You got to keep things a little higher. Maybe you got to replace that couch, which costs $2,000.
Yep.
But even that couch replacement, there's a perfect example. Let's say that a water heater goes out and it's a $2,000 water heater. Or a long-term rental, that might eat a lot of your cash flow for the year, right? That's a big CapEx item.
Sure.
Whereas with the short-term rental, we operate with such high cash flow, we're able to absorb some of those larger ticket items without them completely destroying the returns to us and our investors.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Myth or fact, the cleaner is the most important person on your team in a short-term rental.
It's a fact, yeah. And what we do to really make sure that we have a good set of cleaners is we bring them in-house, either on a 1099 basis or a W-2 in California, so that we have a lot more control over them. We bring in a cleaning manager, and so they manage all of the other cleaners underneath them. We get all of our own supplies, and we have our own SOPs that they follow for how things get cleaned and just the overall due diligence. We have a cleaning manager comes back in and double checks them, but they're your boots on the ground team that's in there every time there's a turnover, which for us is sometimes every day.
Say, you've done a lot inside this industry. What have been the top two or three biggest lessons you've learned from your very first deal to where you're at today?
So I don't know if this is completely a lesson I've learned, but it's a funny quote from Conrad Hilton, who's built the Hilton industry. And someone asked him, he said, what did you learn in your 40 years of running hotels? He says, it's important to keep the shower curtain inside the shower. And to me, it's just, that's the basic thing. You're like, you don't want water all over the floor. You need the places to stay clean. You need to check for the little things. Are there water damages and stuff like that? We've had an issue where, this was just a few months ago, where we ended up with a bunch of mold in a laundry room because somehow people were just doing laundry and not even paying attention to the wall behind it. And there had been a leak. So really taking all those items and making sure that you have processes in place. I think that's the biggest lesson that I've learned out of all of this is you can't go at it yourself. You have to have teams in place. You have to have people to call. We have virtual assistants out of the Philippines that answer most of our phone calls and have the right handyman in place. So really knowing that your team's there, because at the end of the day, this is a customer service business where you have to be on 24/7. If the hot water heater is broken at 5 a.m. because that's when the guy woke up to take a shower, it's got to get fixed.
Yeah. What's your investment philosophy? There's lots of opportunities out there, but what makes an opportunity an actual deal?
So for us, one of the base criteria that we have whenever we buy a short-term rental is to make sure that it cash flows as a long-term rental, because we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where the regulations change, the market change. Luckily, we did very well during COVID, but there was a time there for a minute where things were rocky in the very beginning. So we always want to make sure that if we ever had to pivot back to a long-term rental, we're not negative leverage.
That makes total sense. And speaking of negative leverage, how are you borrowing? There's a lot of uniqueness and it's an evolving landscape as it relates to financing of short-term rentals. There's not a lot of permanent products, if any, out there that exist on the short-term basis. So how are you borrowing today?
Yeah. So borrowing upfront is not super complicated because we are normally buying these as long-term rentals. And the lender, especially on these residential 1-4, they're fine with it. They come in, they're long-term rentals. I've talked to my lender about it. I'm like, do you want to know that we're going to do these as a short-term rental in 6 months? No, I don't want to know that. So come in, buy them as a long-term rental. They get occupied. We get them rehabbed. We get the loan in place. It's normally a 30-year fixed note. And then we come through and our goal is 3 to 4 years down the line to come in and refinance a lot of these. And in the past, most lenders that I've worked with, even on the ones that we've done as short-term rentals, they just want to see 12 months of rent history, right? If you have a QuickBooks file that's going to show the rent for the last 12 months and your expenses, they're pretty okay with it. The second thing they use is AirDNA if you're going in as a purchase. And a lot of times they'll use 90% of what AirDNA predicts your property will return.
And so your plan is to go through a 3 to 5 year time period and refinance. At that point, you're still refinancing at the long-term rental basis?
No. So we'll normally use a short-term rental loan at that point. And they'll just want that 12-month of history. But once you bought the property and you've been operating it, especially for 3 or 4 years, at that point, they're pretty comfortable with
that. You've got a very strong operating history at that juncture.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that makes total sense. Tell me, when you're dealing with investors, what's your communication plan look like back to investors?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing is just consistent communication, right? Because as soon as you stop communicating, they start to get their own ideas in their heads. I mean, we all do, right?
Sure.
No news is bad news. And you're like, wow, I'm not hearing anything and I'm not getting a distribution. What's going on? So for us, we set a schedule. So every month we send an email just with a general update of what's going on. And then once a quarter, we always do a town hall. And that's one where every investor in a certain deal is allowed to hop on this Zoom call. We go through a 5-slide presentation where we talk about where we're at, what we've accomplished this quarter, balance sheet, P&L, and timelines of any projects we have underway. And then from there, we just break into Q&A. Sometimes the Q&A goes 2 minutes and there was one question. Sometimes it'll go for 30 or 40 minutes and people got a handful of questions. And for the most part, it just keeps people informed. Even the ones who don't join will get emails later. Oh, thanks, but the recording was great, things of that nature.
What do you think attracts investors to one particular asset class over another?
So I think most people have their own needs, right? So they all have their own goals that they want. Some people, you could bring them a deal that cash flows 50% a year and they're going to keep saying no to it, even if it's guaranteed. Let's say you found a magical deal that's guaranteed and they're going to say no because they're not chasing cash flow, right? They have all the money they want. But maybe they have a huge tax problem, right? They don't care about more dollars in the bank. They want to stop giving the government money.
Yeah.
So you really have to find the deal that matches the investor. But in general, we like our short-term rental offerings because they're higher cash flow than a standard multifamily deal that's maybe 2 to 3% cash on cash return. We have a 6 pref and our targets are 8%. So we're able to boost that cash flow from the short-term rental basis and then still have that equity appreciation over the long-term that you would get in most real estate deals. Mm-hmm.
As you look forward to 2024, what are you most excited about for the next year?
That's not a question I normally get. So for the next year for us, it's stabilizing a lot of the deals that we've acquired this year. Not that they're necessarily in any type of bad shape, but they're new. So, yeah. And then continuing to build processes, right? So take the deals that were currently in construction. I'm excited to see a lot of them come to fruition, get online. We do some pretty heavy rehabs on some of them. So really seeing those all start to take shape. One of my business partners is out in Memphis right now working on checking on a 4-unit building of ours, getting all the furniture put in. So it's exciting to see when these buildings start to come to life and you get to the point where you can start taking photos.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that next level happens to be?
I think a lot of it's psychology. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll take this back to a course I took when I was still in college. I was interested in investing. I'd done a handful of investing in the past. And what I took was a 12-week course on foreign currency trading. And in the first 4 weeks of that 12 weeks, so 1/3 of it, it was all psychology. They didn't talk about the markets. They didn't talk about foreign currency. It was getting your head around trading and knowing that when you enter, there's a spot you enter at, there's a spot you exit at, and there's a spot you take gains at. And those don't change once you hit execute on the trade. So I think a lot of people have this plan. They spend all this time. They look at the deal. They feel comfortable with it, but then they get in their head and they don't want to move forward because they're worried about all the little things that are going to happen. So I think a lot of it's psychology.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Outside of real estate, I really enjoy hanging out with friends. And a hobby of mine I picked up a few years ago was flying. So I got my pilot's license. I bought a little plane and I like going out, taking that around where I live in Northern California, around the countryside, and just going out and sightseeing and taking friends to go get lunch in fun places.
Very cool. Your favorite book?
My favorite book is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. I think it's a great read and it really helps mentally give you some discipline on when things are your fault and when things go awry, how to handle the situation.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
For me, it's being able to provide jobs, right? We're not the largest employer by any standpoint, but continuing to build out our business to the point where we can provide jobs and a good work environment for people.
That's great. Adam, it's been a great conversation. You have so many experiences. I'm certain we could talk for hours at end. And when we're together physically, like we were not that many months ago, we will do it together. For people who they want to continue a conversation with me or they want to find you, follow you, connect, where can they go? What should they do?
Yeah. So bidwellcapitalfund.com is our website. So you can find all of our contact information on there. You can schedule a call with me through Calendarly. Love to talk to people, love to talk about investing, love to talk about short-term rentals or oil, if anything like that interests them. Always happy to do just a chat like this and talk about the deals we've done.
Yeah, very cool. Hey, the link's below in the show notes for everybody. Adam, I appreciate your time here. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.